credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed rate mortgage is 4.375%. APR 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Quest Diagnostics, one of the biggest blood testing companies in the U.S., says millions of its customers may have had their personal information exposed online. A bill collecting vendor that works for Quest says an unauthorized user had access to the system for close to a year. Quest says the user may have credit card and bank information along with social security numbers as well as medical data. It's a tragic end in the search for a Texas toddler. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
Remains found in Arkansas have been identified as those of a missing Houston 4-year-old. The Harris County Medical Examiner confirming that Malia Davis's remains were in the trash bag found by a roadway in Fulton. They were discovered on Friday after an activist said he'd been able to get her stepfather, Darian Vence, to confess to killing her. Vence claimed last month that Davis was kidnapped. Vence is currently being held on tampering with evidence charges, but Houston police say he'll now be charged with murder.
This is USA Radio News.
Here's a great deal on MyPillow. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, type in promo code USA, you'll get two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. Now, that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA.
A delegation is in Washington, D.C. for talks as President Trump threatens across-the-board tariffs in an effort to get the country to do more to stop the flow of migrants across the southern border. Republican AG from Texas, Ken Paxton, tells Fox News this is what needs to be done.
Well, obviously, the president has been concerned about this for a long time. He's been talking about problems with Mexico allowing illegal immigration through their own country and then into our country for his entire administration. So, hopefully, with this threat of a tariff, we will get action by Mexico to actually at least protect our border if they don't want to protect their own.
As far as how Mexico has responded, the Attorney General tells Fox News.
Well, it looks like they are responding. They immediately sent people up to Washington to talk. And as you just suggested, those talks are beginning and hopefully in earnest. And hopefully Mexico will take this seriously and respond to what the president is asking, which is just stop the illegal flow and we can keep these tariffs off.
Another active weather day in parts of the country, as we hear from USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Storms across the Midwest, the Plains, and the South are bringing new threats of flash flooding. Areas of West Texas, Kansas, eastern Nebraska, and western Iowa facing the greatest risk today and tonight. Major flooding continuing as well in Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Arkansas.
Please remember you can find us online at usaradio.com or on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
As sometimes is the case here at Hatton Hunterdon, we got busy talking and forgot to do our job here. So welcome to our edition. Today is June 3rd, and we're going to have weather and some commercials and the news, so stay with us.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hatton Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hatton Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
All right, already I have a troublemaker in the studio, and we just started, and I'm already distracted and trying to find our weather. We definitely have to do the weather today. So it's not like it is summer, which it is definitely summer, but it does not feel like it. It definitely, I have a long sleeve shirt on, and I was looking for my jacket on my way over here, which was not in my car, I might add. So this is what you have in store for you today. It is actually beautiful, though, so I'm not complaining. And it's a great day to be outside. We did wrap up Bicycle Week for May, the month of May, now that we're into June. But If you didn't get a chance to do Bike to Work Week, now is a great time to get the cycle out. It is about 66 degrees. We're going to go down tonight into the 40s, so you might need a blanket. But the sun's shining tomorrow. We have another beautiful day, even if it is a little seasonably cool. But then the heat returns on Wednesday. We're looking at a high of 80. Thursday, some showers and a high of 82. And Friday is a good beach day because we have 80 degrees. Saturday, beautiful beach day, 78 degrees. So we are in the 50s every night this week. So that is a little chilly. But that frost is long gone, so we don't have to worry about that. And the heavy dew is great for the crops. The corn's coming up, and all the flowers love that morning dew. So we have that going on. We're going to do a commercial, and then I'll be back with my guests. Stay with me.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
All right, we're back in the studio, and we are broadcasting Facebook Live, I think, although I haven't checked that out. I will do that in just a second. I wanted to introduce my guest today, so I'm really excited to have him in the studio, and I'm going to make sure his I didn't check his mic yet, so we're going to do it on air. We're a work in progress, Chris.
This is always building the plane while we're flying it.
And not there were two planes that crashed, and one in Atlantic City or Atlantic County, one in Cape May County last week, so we don't want to do that.
Let's not do that.
No, that just came to mind. No plane crashing. We'll just stick with the building, I guess. What? So if you could let everyone know where you're from and what you do.
Well, I'm Christopher Gokey, and I'm the executive director of Morris County Prevention is Key and the Center for Addiction Recovery, Education, and Success.
Okay, so some people are familiar with Morris County Prevention is Key, and also the acronym that you use for CARES. Mm-hmm. And you do a lot of different programs, and your organization is a nonprofit. If people want to donate, do you have the Amazon Smiles? I know that's a really popular
I don't think we one. Do. No, we have a donate button on all of our websites.
All right, and the website address?
It's www.mcpik.org.
Excellent, and I did post that this morning on Facebook for Hot and Hunterdon, and I'll continue to do that as we go through our show today. We have a lot of things we want to talk about. We want to talk about some of the community work that you do, and really about what you're seeing in the community and how you're able to serve the needs of the community and how we can support your efforts.
Okay. Well, Prevention is Key has been around now, going to be 30 years this year. It's our 30th anniversary. And originally, they were part of what was known as the New Jersey Prevention Network. And our primary mission and function is to provide community-based prevention around substance abuse and other issues of community health. That's since expanded in recent years, mostly in response to what we see now as the opiate overdose epidemic that's taken not only New Jersey but the nation. And so we've kind of moved from the prevention side of the continuum over into the recovery side of the continuum by opening our CARES Recovery Center in Morris.
And I know you have always been patient with me trying to figure out what everything is. So when we talk about an opiate addiction, what things are we talking about? Anything that causes us to become addicted, or how technical is it?
Well, addiction has gone through many phases in terms of what people perceive it to be, but we do now know that it is a public health issue. It is a disease, absolutely. And so it's being, hopefully, in more and more cases, being treated as such. So we look at it as something that not dissimilar to a chronic condition like heart disease, diabetes, things like that. There is a genetic component to it, but we're learning more and more about that as time goes on. But it's really a public health issue mostly.
And I guess I have some concerns, especially in this fiscal year, because when we look at the opioid numbers for overdoses and the Narcans, those numbers are dropping. But I don't think that's indicative of there being less of a need. So can you talk to, are you seeing still a growing trend of people that need assistance? What do you think about that?
Well, we were having this conversation before we went on the air, and that has to do with the fact that the data isn't always being captured in its best way and in a complete way. And so the picture that gets painted is one where we're looking at it through not just a rose-colored lens, but probably several of them. Yes, the numbers are, in fact, going down. As a matter of fact, I was at a meeting 2 weeks ago where we were looking at some of the data, and actual Narcan uses across the state are down about 30%. But when we began to talk amongst ourselves, and this was all of the grantees who work within the opioid overdose recovery program here in the state, there's 21 of us, it became very evident that it's not only the work that we're doing in providing Narcan in the communities and responding to overdoses in the emergency departments, but it's also there's a big law enforcement component to this. There have been several recent large busts of fentanyl that never made it onto the street. And so that's had an impact on those numbers as well. And so there is no silver bullet. My favorite saying. Everybody thinks about what's the answer. Well, there isn't one answer. There's a lot of answers, and they have to be utilized and deployed all together at the same time. And that's where we begin to see the numbers drop. Can you point to just one thing and say, that's it? No.
And every community is different. In some communities, treatment's easier to get into than others, and that could help with the reducing the relapse rate or improving the successful recovery. Mm-hmm. Some communities have such a waiting list, it's impossible to get in at the moment when you want to go into recovery.
So as part of the opioid overdose recovery program, we have what is known as a patient navigator. And so that person is really charged with working with those individuals to be able to navigate them into appropriate treatment at the time that they're ready to go. And that's largely built around relationships with treatment providers and being very knowledgeable about being able to meet that person where they're at and know how to best plug them into the system. And so in the case of, of our project in Morris, we rarely have people waiting more than 24 hours.
That's incredible. I mean, that is a testament of your presence in that county and a continuous communication with all the different providers.
Absolutely. It's not something that you just go out and spend, we're going to spend this first month, we're going to really build all those relationships, and then you turn your back on them. That's not how it works. We have to be with them, and those providers and the ground that we work on is changing constantly. There are new players in the game, and old players are leaving. And so we need to constantly be kind of at that leading edge of building those relationships and knowing what's out there for the people that need the help.
And it's a hard situation to navigate, often the different systems and what's covered and what's not covered. And I believe your organization, aren't you one of the first to do the ORP initiative?
Well, we're actually the Opioid Overdose Recovery Project, or the ORP as they're known. We were actually in the second group. So there were 10 funded originally, and then the remaining 11 were funded about 10 months later. So we were in the second group. We actually provided, in that first round of funding, some of the training for the peers who were providing the services in the emergency department. So we actually trained three of the first 10 groups were trained by us.
And that's, I think, part of what you're communicating about the different tools and resources, mm-hmm. always adding. So you have the patient navigator. Now you have trained personnel, mm-hmm. that can respond to the emergency room.
Right.
You have a way to do a warm handoff so someone can get into treatment, which is critical.
Absolutely. These are trained, credentialed people who have personal experience with recovery for themselves. So these are people, these certified peer recovery specialists, as they're known, are folks who have been down that road. And so when they walk into that hospital room with someone who has been revived from an opiate overdose with Narcan, they can stand there and be very genuine with them and say, hey, I know where you've been. I know where you're at. How can I help you? And that is usually the first time that somebody in their life, because we hear this constantly as a feedback from the folks that we work with, it's the first time that anybody's ever actually taken the time to listen to them, and that's huge. Our success rates are really good as a result of this. I mean, we typically will get between 70 and 80% of the people that we encounter through the York program to say yes right there, that they'll take services, which is really good to begin with.
I thought you were going to say 8%.
No,
not.
No.
That's and incredible.
And then from that point, depending upon what they need, whether that's treatment, detox, continuing, recovery, peer support, and everybody's different, we can, given on any given day or time when we take a look at the data, we'll be somewhere in the between 60 and 75-78% of those folks are in long-term recovery, 60, 90, 30 days beyond.
And so why do you think that is? Because that is not the typical numbers. That's not the typical response. It's not the typical recovery numbers.
One of the reasons is that we insist that all of our peer recovery specialists be people in long-term recovery. And that is a huge piece. I think that's undervalued in the total, program itself statewide. There are a lot of folks out there that are affected by addiction who are peers, but it's not the same thing, and it's not what we've seen in our project.
And you call that the lived experience?
Lived experience, yes.
So that is one of the many things that separates?
It really does. It adds a specific amount of genuine it's that peerness. It's that it's no longer a power situation as there is in, let's take a look at a clinical situation where you have a client and a therapist. So you have a disparity in terms of power. Mm-hmm. In a peer situation, there isn't. They're equal. And so we meet them where they're at by saying, how can I help with your recovery today? And sometimes it's, I'm not ready to go to treatment, but I just need somebody to talk to. And then 3 weeks later, I'm ready. And as long as we're walking with them down that path and we're there when they say, okay, I'm ready, we can make that phone call and get them where they need to be.
All right, I have to do some commercials here. And addiction is a complicated process. It is one that needs a lot of different resources, and it's one that claims the lives of our family, our sister, our brothers, our daughters, our children who have to struggle and try to figure out a way to recovery that can benefit them and that they can be able to have the resources they need in the community. It's really critical. We'll be back to talk with Chris a little bit more.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. offices located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody out there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, so my listeners know, Chris, I am not a technology whiz. I'm even surprised that we're live here, but I do try. I do give it a try, and it looks like we're still good so far. But I was so impressed when I found out that you had launched an app for recovery addiction. Can we talk a little bit?
Sure. Early on when we started the Recovery Center, which is now coming up on 5 years, this is its fifth year, really wanted to find a way that we could be able to provide a pathway to engage with us and allow people to access the resources that we had available on a 24/7 basis, knowing full well that you just don't know when, you know, that moment's going to happen for someone and they're like, hey, I need to talk to somebody, I need to get to a meeting, I need to, you know, whatever that next thing is, I'm ready to do it now. And so we decided that we would come up with some kind of an app that would allow a lot of that to happen. And so we created the CARES app. It's available on, you know, the App Store, Google, iPhone. It works in both. You can, I think if you search CARES Addiction Recovery, it'll come up. It's a purple icon with a C in it. And so anybody who downloads that onto their web-enabled device, tablet, phone, whatever, can access peer recovery specialists. They can see all of what's going on in the recovery center at any time, the trainings that are happening. They can find a meeting, whether it's a 12-step meeting. We do all recovery meetings. We do Buddhist-centered meetings. We do things like Y2SR, which is yoga of 12-step recovery. We do all kinds of different things, and it's all there available on the app. We also do a monthly breakfast. So every month, one Monday a month, we kind of invite the entire community in to kind of sit, and we do it thematically. Each month we have a theme where we kind of focus on certain topics. And these are our partners. We get everybody from the treatment providers and law enforcement and the human service providers, as well as people who are in recovery, families, friends, and loved ones of those who are affected by addiction come. And we usually average between 60 and 120 people in the recovery center, depending on the month, of course. And it's usually sponsored by one of our treatment providers who provides breakfast for everyone. And it's about an hour. We keep it to an hour. It's a real short and sweet opportunity for everybody to kind of get together and talk about the various things that happen. It was out of those breakfasts that a lot of what we do gets born. Probably one of the most notable things, which is now it's being seen more and more across the state as other communities are adopting it, is the Hope One van was born out of a breakfast. And so, yeah, it's very positive.
And how does that happen over breakfast? Is that just, we need this, and, oh, we should look for a resource? Like,
actually, that, do you really want the real story?
Yeah.
I can tell you the real story, not the story, the fable that gets told a lot, because there is a fable. Actually, that project was the result of a serendipitous email to me one afternoon by Capital Health Systems. So I'm from Mercer County, still use a lot of my health care down there, and so they email me all the time. And excuse me, they send me all their updates, and so I got this really cool email from them one afternoon that Robert Wood Johnson and Capital Health had gotten this great grant, and they had invested it in this mobile stroke recovery vehicle that they were, you know, they had a CAT scan on the machine, on the vehicle, and they were going to be able to treat people who had strokes right there on site before they get them to the hospital. And I'm literally reading this email when my chief peer recovery specialist pokes his head in my office door and says, "Hey, I just came from a meeting with the sheriff, and the sheriff wants to find a way to be able to do some really some grassroots, you know, community outreach. He's talking about knocking on people's doors, but I don't think it's a good idea." He goes, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Stand there for a second." I said, and then time it took me to hit print, took the email, I handed it to him, and I said, "If he's got a van that he's not doing anything with," I said, "we should do this. I said, we should take what we do and him and collaborate and come up with a mobile vehicle to go out and interface with the community." The very next day was a breakfast, and so, of course, who's there but the sheriff? And so we all sit down after the breakfast and begin to talk about this, and that's literally how it was born. So we have us, the Sheriff's Department, the Mental Health Association of New Jersey, and the Human Service Department in Morris County that are all collaborating on this. But now, what are we? That was April 2017 it was launched. So we're now 3 years, 2 years down the road, and we have, there's Newark is on board, Atlantic's on board, there's a couple more.
Do you have Trenton?
Trenton is talking about, there's a whole bunch of them that are all kind of doing it. Essex County.
Jersey City.
Jersey City. Atlantic, Cape May. It seems like every time I turn around, there's another one that has a Hope One van going out and doing this.
Because it's such a great idea.
Well, yeah, we kind of married that with our Narcan. We have the OOP grant, not the ORP, but the OOP, the opioid overdose prevention, which is where we're distributing the Narcan kits to the community. So our that OOP grant partners with Hope One, and so we go out. I have a peer on that van every day that it's out, and they're giving, you know, they're doing the Narcan trainings, giving out the kits, and then, you know, interfacing with anybody that needs help.
That's phenomenal. And when things have changed in the industry with the overdoses and the rate of overdoses, you need disruptors to the market. You need something that's going to disrupt the flow of drugs, if it's more enforcement, if it's more targeted tracking of how the shipments are coming in. And how do you get to the people? Because they are so many of the people that are suffering from addiction and relapse, they're on the street. They've wasted all their three wishes, and or not wasted it, but used them, and everyone in between, and there's no family anymore. There's no resources anymore. Every bridge has, you know, been burned for so many of the people, and they're out on the street. They're in the train stations, and they're outside, and they're in the park, and, you know, maybe they lived in their car at one time, but now they don't have the car anymore. So how do you get them? They're not going to the social service office.
No. And they're usually some of the most challenging cases to navigate. But with the Hope One, you know, kind of an approach, we can be at the park. We can be at the train station. We can be at the mall. We can be at the community, you know, fairs and things and events that are happening throughout the county on a 12-month basis, and the numbers clearly show that, you know, through Hope One alone in the last year, we've had 30 kits used, we know of, that have actually come back and said we need another, you know, dose of Narcan. So there's 30 lives that we know we had an absolute, you know, effect on, and that we don't know everyone, but we know those 30 for sure. But then the interesting aspect of it is that we so often are the point where we are speaking mostly with family, friends, and loved ones. They're the ones that usually come into the van. I have a son, a brother, a father, a mother who needs help. You know, how can we? And that's how the conversation begins.
And there's really not a lot of resources. I was looking too for children. So you may have, you know, there are all different ages of children that are suffering the loss of a parent, either from overdose or because they are not on the path of recovery and they're still using. And there's not a lot of literature for children. And I know in your approach, you're looking at Even we know that those, the protective factors we need to raise for children who have one or more parent that's addicted or incarcerated, all of those things, you know, how do we sort of get the bubble wrap around the families and the children?
It's a challenge, and it's one of the things I was having this conversation with Barbara, who you know,
yeah,
my director of prevention, and we were kind of lamenting the fact that, you know, in the last 10 years, we've watched so much of the resources that used to be there for the youth kind of shift away, and it's just kind of gone away, and not necessarily been replaced with anything.
No.
It's just kind of gone. Massive gap. We try and marry, one of the beauty aspects of having the recovery center is the fact that we can use that recovery center as an opportunity to reach a highly vulnerable population in need with the prevention side of the agency. So we have a lot, we have grants where we're able to go into the community and provide prevention programming, family-based programs like Strengthening Families Program, which you probably are aware of. And so we can actually, and are doing this, we're providing Strengthening Families programs to the families who are utilizing the recovery center. So it's very symbiotic in that respect.
And you need a language for these kids.
You need
to be able to explain to them what is going on and to make sure that they don't do the same things.
Yeah, I know. Barbara and I had this conversation saying that, you know, it's almost like they're just going to ignore this until they end up as adults with the problem themselves, and then we'll deal with it.
Certainly seems that way.
It feels it.
And we know when there is an addiction in the family that the risk for the children increases.
Oh, it goes through the roof.
So why are we not putting prevention dollars in to minimize that? I don't know.
Right. Well, you know, unfortunately, it's the same old thing. It's like this is the way we've always done things. You know, well, it's not, if it really worked, why are we having this conversation? So something else needs to be done, unfortunately.
And it's really part of my frustration, too, with data collection and data review. And I feel like as a state, as a country, as a nation, as a community, we don't have a handle on what the real problems are, how many people are, you know, what resources people need to be in recovery and how it's impacting our community. And I just feel like with the increase of being able to get the kits from, you know, your pharmacy, are we tracking those numbers at all? We weren't tracking overdoses under 18 until this year, maybe last year at the earliest, certainly not prior to that. How can we even begin to define solutions when we don't even know the extent of the problem?
You've kind of hit the nail on the head. It's an interesting, I don't even know how to put this. Until we spent 5 years, I'm going to say this, historically we spent 5 years before we opened the recovery center really looking all around the nation at models and, you know, what recovery community organizations look like, and thought we had a very clear idea of what we wanted to do here and what we thought would work here, because we had no grant money to do this. We opened this with a wing and a prayer, basically, and a teeny little grant from OFBI to just kind of get the business plan put together, which was great. I thank Eddie every day for that. Because you and I both know Eddie, and we love
him.
I
actually saw him last week.
Did you? Yeah. Eddie's the best. I call him Fast Eddie.
But why did you do that? Why did you, with no money, and why?
Because it needed to be done. And I really knew at that point, 10 years ago probably, what we were going to be looking at was a definite need for recovery support services that, with the advent of the Affordable Care Act and what that was going to do to treatment and the availability of treatment, it was very clear to me that recovery supports were going to be the thing that it was going to need to be present in much greater quantity to fill the gap, that those services were going to be the cost-effective way to approach this, because treatment was going to be a hell of a lot more expensive and nowhere near as available as it was at the time. And, oh, yeah, unfortunately,
right.
I was dead on with that one.
You are absolutely right. So you looked at data for 5 years.
We looked at data. We looked at models. We looked at a lot of things. Thought we had a very clear idea of what we wanted to do.
opened the recovery center, and that's me. And and at that point, you know, it was like, okay, we're going to, you know, rah-rah, run down this road. And lo and behold, you know, immediately it became apparent that what we thought we knew, we didn't. And it, you know, and it really did. It changed completely over the first couple of years. It was remarkable. You've been to breakfast. You've been in and out of my place. It's hard to imagine what it was like when we opened the doors and I couldn't give away a dozen bagels at a breakfast. Okay, and so now I got 100 people crashing my doors. It's SRO, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, and that's how much different it is. So when you talk about data, you know, data is a thing where we don't have a handle on the problem. Mm-hmm. We don't collect it well. We talk about it a lot. And then when you think about, when I look at what I've learned in 5 years of doing this with this recovery center, and I look at what I read within, you know, the business of that business. So that's, you know, everything that's coming out of Washington and all the other thinkers like, you know, White and others who write and you know, kind of that whole body of knowledge. We don't keep good track of the numbers. We get wrapped up in all kinds of other stuff and don't understand that the data doesn't lie.
That's right.
That's where the unshakable facts are.
That's absolutely right. And even within the community, you've built a community. I've been to your office many times, and it's a community. Sometimes there's yoga going on. Sometimes there's breakfast. Sometimes there's just people being and sitting on the couch or staff talking to clients, you know, just everyone just being equal, sitting around on, you know, a couch and just being able just to talk.
Yeah,
and it's a community. You've built a community, and maybe that's part of the success.
Well, it is. I mean, it definitely is. And it's also one of a lot of things happened when I got out to Morris, which is now 14 years ago. I don't know how many years ago. It's a long time. I had some hair back. I don't have it anymore. You know, a lot of the folks in my world were very siloed in what they did. And so I tried very hard to figure out how can we get all of the players in this community to work well together. And it took a lot of time. And we tried a million different things. And it wasn't until we got involved in the recovery community side of life that those walls began to come down, because they were able to kind of somehow get themselves around the opiate issue, because it affected everybody. Everybody. And so that had that positive effect, and that's where that community happened.
And I think the open-mindedness of not separating or segregating treatment and recovery, like you know, even if you're not providing one, you have to have access to it and connect to it. And I fear some people put their, you know, walls up, well, I just do this and I only do this. And we have people dying every day across every socioeconomic area. We don't have time for those walls or this is just what I do. It's all hands on deck.
It is. It absolutely is. The ship's on the rocks. Somebody better get it off.
Yeah. All right. So we have planes crashing. We have ships smashing. So perhaps with these analogies, I better pay the bills while I still can. So I'm going to do a couple commercials, and then I'll be back here in the studio to talk to Chris a little bit more. And I want to get to, this happens a lot, radio time goes so quickly, but I want to figure out how we can help him. I know he has a lot of different opportunities where the community can get involved, where we can say, you know, this is not acceptable to us. We want to be part of the solution. So we're going to dive into that when we return.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908 384-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
And this is your host, Georgine Trinkle. We're at Hot and Hunterdon talking to Chris Gokey from Morris County Preventionist Key or CARES. You may be familiar with one or both pieces of the organization that is trying to prevent more overdoses and trying to increase preventative measures. So, Chris, thanks for being with us today. I know it just flies by when you're in the studio. We drag our soapboxes in and trying to right all the wrongs of the world. But I wanted to make sure people, and I was able to post your Facebook page so people can take a look at that app, because that app is really something. It is really, there's nothing like that.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
You know, people really looking for meetings, anything like that, they're going to find that really helpful. But as you said earlier, you kind of did this on a wing and a prayer, a little tiny gift, grant gift from Eddie. So what can, this is important things, because we don't have the data, the money doesn't follow, because they're still trying to craft information about what we should do about the problem, but you're actually out there solving the problem. So how can we help you?
Well, none of this operates, you know, it may have started on a wing and a prayer, but it doesn't operate on prayers or wings. It operates on money. And so we're always in a hunt for grant dollars and things like that. And we do have fundraisers and we do take donations. We have a lovely partnership coming up event in August with the Wallen Foundation, who is a family foundation. They had lost their son, who we were working with, Michael. This is the second year they're going to be doing this. That's a fantastic day out golfing at the country club. And I think the information is on our website and on our Facebook page. So that's always a lot of fun. We have a lot of things also happening with respect to the recovery community. We have events at Great Adventure, and I think they're doing a beach trip as well coming up this summer. So anybody who is in recovery and interested in joining us, they can come and sign up for those type of things as well.
And I can't say what all the pillars are, but you always make sure that the home and hearth, the community, the volunteer giving back, that those activities are going on for the peer recovery specialists and for people going into recovery.
Absolutely. Yeah, a big piece of what we do, whenever we encounter anyone who is looking to either get into recovery is just looking for some assistance. We usually get them involved with our telephone recovery support. We were talking about this a little earlier, where this is where it's an opt-in service that someone can receive a phone call from a peer at our office and just check in and see how they're doing week by week, just to say, hey, how are you, and how are you doing, and is there anything I can help you with within your recovery? And so that's a mutuality where it serves both the person who's receiving the phone call and the peer who's actually making the call itself. So,
and that is, if you're in recovery or hoping to be in recovery, sometimes that's the only person that's caring about you all week is that one call. And that's the hope, that you're going to hang on to that, and you know at a certain time you can call and
right.
talk to someone.
Absolutely. Well, and if you speak to anyone who's in recovery, they'll often tell you that that telephone is the heaviest thing on the planet. And so to be able to actually have to pick it up is very hard, to know that someone is going to be calling you at, you know, 10 o'clock on Tuesday, every Tuesday, as long as you'd like that phone call, just to say hi and see how you are, is usually tremendous for them.
And sometimes that's the only lifeline, so mm-hmm. it's great that you provide that. And that number can be found off the website. It's
right. They can sign up either via the app or on our website. It's just an opt-in. You kind of just fill out your phone number and a time that you'd like to receive a call, and one of our peers will put you in the system and you'll call.
It's pretty powerful stuff.
Pretty simple.
So we have that going on. We have your August 9th charity golf classic that you just mentioned. We just put a picture of the flyer up there. And then you talked about the July 24th Camelback Beach Water Park. So, and even do transportation if that's an issue for anyone.
Yeah, we do. We have a van, which we take people all over the place with. So, yeah.
And my favorite, because this is going on sometimes in your office, and I love it. Yeah, I love it. It's the yoga of 12-step recovery. The issues live in our tissues. So we always do so many interesting health and different energies, spiritual energies, and all the different types of ways to learn and to get your mind and your spirit free to think and breathe. And I love the yoga piece, because if anyone's done yoga, it opens you up to, so you could really listen. Your body, your mind, it could tell you things, but there's all that chatter or disruption or negativity, and it just lets you be.
Well, it fits very beautifully with really what is one of the foundational cornerstones of the recovery center, which is the fact that we honor all pathways to recovery. It doesn't really matter whether you are a 12-stepper or you are, you want to follow any 3, 10, or 20 different paths of recovery. We will be there to support you. And so the yoga is just one, one more piece or path that we, will support you in.
And I just really admire that we can talk about recovery and understand that there's no model for one person, that people sometimes have to try 10 different ways to recovery. And, sometimes it may be off the wall. I'm going to follow this. Okay, how are you going to do that? That's not right. It's okay. Okay, what's your plan? How are we going to help you and support you to do that?
Exactly. Exactly. And sometimes, for us, we had to be willing to accept the fact that some folks are not ready for treatment or to be abstinent. Sometimes we have to walk down the path of harm reduction with them in order to get them to the place where they actually do find full recovery. Okay, that's fine. That's what we do. Because if we don't do that, they're going to end up in a far worse place. So by being there, we can kind of help that process along.
Absolutely. And what we think should be bottom, we can't judge that for people.
No, not at all. My bottom is not your bottom. My way is not your way.
Yeah. So I think those things really help to try to stem this. I mean, it is obviously a public health epidemic, mm-hmm. and we really need to change how we think about it, how we respond to it, how we capture the data for it, and save our community. We have people dying at these alarming rates, and I can't understand why.
I know it's you can just really, when you step back and you look at it historically, that we've been caught flat-footed very badly. You know, it's one of the reasons why, as we built the recovery center, we built a lot of data capture into this. You can keep going back to the data, and that's a huge piece about what we do. You know, we cap, like, part of the telephone recovery support is really the backbone of the whole thing is a correlational database where we capture virtually every phone call, every interaction, everything we do with anybody is captured. So we know where they are, where they're going, where they've been, and everything in between that we can possibly get a hold of so that we can take a look at, you know, what works, what doesn't, what's a waste of time, where do we need to invest.
And with the peer recovery support training that you did, I know you went to another state and you trained in it, and now you're actually delivering programs. Do you do that all throughout New Jersey?
Sure. Yeah, that's a long story.
That's our specialty here.
Yeah, that's another long story. That long story. So way back when, before we had a credential here in New Jersey, we were already in the process with Eddie and getting, you know, heading toward a recovery center. And so what was available to us was the CCAR community, Connecticut Community for Addiction Recovery, CCAR, another acronym. they had a recovery coaching curricula and training available. So myself and members of my staff went up to Connecticut and trained in that. And they had some additional other training, spirituality training, and a bunch of other things. And so we brought it back into New Jersey, and we're actually, as trainers, and we're actually training it at the recovery center. Somewhere along the line, we were contacted by the Addiction Professionals Certification Board and asked if we would be interested in assisting them and actually writing the curriculum for the credential that they wanted to bring out. And that was an easy yes. But, you know, again, that was a case of they didn't have any money. Could we do it? Would we do it? You know, that was a wing and a prayer. And so we did it and marketed it, you know, exclusively for a year and kind of tested it to make sure it was well. We're in our third, I guess it's the third edition of the curriculum at this point.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
And so, yes, they've opened it up. There are others training it. We have some licensees that are training it and some others. They've opened up the training to a few other you know, curricula that are out there, but we wrote the original and trained it all over the state. We actually had a grant with CVS for 2 years, and they provided scholarship dollars for, well, God, I guess we're close to 400 people we've trained.
That's
from
incredible.
High Point to Cape May as peer recovery specialists. So we were kind of at the very, very cutting edge of building this new workforce that's here in the state.
That's really encouraging. And another reason why we really have to support agencies that are able to find different solutions and then find the money, not chase the money, but do what's right in the community and then find the money to help flow with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were a great partner.
So, Chris, we are wrapping up our time here. I don't know how, but it is time for our news break just about. Just want to make sure that if you don't mind giving out maybe your telephone number, if anyone wants to call you.
Sure.
That would be great.
So I can always be reached at 973-625-1998, extension 111. I'm easy to find.
Well, I don't know about that, but we definitely are glad that you're here with us today and can talk a little bit and share a little bit. And I'm looking forward to being able to do a series this summer on addiction and recovery supports with you and,
sure.
and your staff.
Oh, they're very excited. They can't wait to come and play.
Great. There's so many layers to this, and I want to be able to dive into some of the issues. And it is an epidemic, and I want to make sure that we're all aware of this. It's surprising if it doesn't impact your daily life, but if it doesn't, we want to make sure you're aware of it. So, Chris, from Morris County, Prevention is Key and CARES, thanks for being in the studio with us today.
Thank you, Georgina. It's great to be here.
All right, so we have another show coming on, and before we do that, I know you all want to know what's going on in this great world, so we're going to do the news. Stay with us.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump take part in a state banquet with the UK royal family. The president delivers some remarks.
This evening, we thank God for the brave sons of the United Kingdom and the United States who defeated the Nazis and the Nazi regime and liberated millions from tyranny. The bond between our nations was forever sealed in that great crusade.
California Attorney General Javier Becerra saying the state plans on suing the pharmaceutical company behind the painkiller OxyContin, Purdue Pharma.
The truth is the start of this crisis can be traced back to Purdue Pharmaceutical, or Purdue Pharma, and the Sackler family and their pursuit of profits.
California joining at least 40 other states in suing Purdue Pharma. This is USA Radio News.
Andro 400 Max, man, that's a game changer. You know, I don't eat as much as I used to, and I don't miss it, and I don't feel deprived. I've lost 37 pounds, and the spare tire around my waist is gone. I mean, it's gone. Plus, I've got a lot more energy. You know, I couldn't be happier.
Now, listen to what Bill said about Andro 400.
I have tried all kind of different things to lose weight for years, and this thing is crazy.
Hi, I'm Captain Obvious, and every day thousands of people book trips on Hotels.com. Trips you will later hate like. What's a hate like? It's when you like Becky's picture of another perfect waterfall, even though you kind of hate it. It's not that you hate Becky, it's that you hate that she's there, and you're at work listening to Lisa talk about her alleged food allergies. Don't hate like Becky's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there, do that, get rewarded.
Possible trade wars with China and Mexico is one of the main reasons you'll be paying less at the pump this week, as we hear from USA Radio Network's John Clemens.
The other factor is a decrease in the price of oil that is down almost $5 from last week to $52.67 a barrel. Patrick DeHaan of GasBuddy.com gives us the latest figures.
The national average gallon of gasoline in the U.S. has shed another 2 cents per gallon. The nation's average now $2.81 per gallon. We now stand about 14 cents lower than where we were last year on the state.
Acting Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAleland is warning Mexico if they don't step up to do more to stop the influx of illegal immigrants from Mexico into the United States, they'll have to face the consequences.
Operationally, we've had great partnerships with Mexico in the past. But 1,000 people a day, when we're apprehending 4,500 a day, is not making an impact. We need more.
That audio courtesy of CNN's State of the Union, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
New details are out regarding the gunman who killed a dozen people, mostly co-workers, in Virginia Beach. More from USA Radio Network's Rick Vincent.
The gunman in the shooting massacre that left 12 people dead and others injured in a Virginia Beach city building where he worked had submitted his letter of resignation hours before the shooting. Virginia Beach City Manager Dave Hatchin says that despite him being in good standing.
He notified his chain of command that morning.
The morning, Friday?
Yes.
And he was or was I emailed?
My understanding is he did that via email.
He was not forced to resign?
Negative.
Was the resignation over a position that he was applying for and did not get?
Not to my knowledge.
He had worked as an engineer for the city. For USA Radio News, I'm Rick Vincent.
North Carolina lottery officials say one lucky ticket holder will take home just over $344 million in the Powerball jackpot that they won on Saturday evening. The winner has not come forward yet, but officials say the winning ticket was sold at Carly C's grocery store. Owner of Carly C's, Mac McLam, says this sort of money will change this person's life forever.
We are so grateful to just here at Carly C's that we could just play a small part in this, that we could play a part in not only changing someone's life, but actually changing someone's generational life, and that it would carry on. Because $340 million would go on several lifetimes.
Please remember you can find us on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.